At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The news from Europe. European countries trigger snapback sanctions on Iran. This is The Hill reporting in these last hours. The United Kingdom, France, and Germany took the first step on Thursday, 24 hours past, in snapping back severe sanctions on Iran over its nuclear program, signaling the death knell for the Obama-era nuclear deal, called in the acronym JCPOA. I welcome Henry Sikorski, the executive director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center, writing most recently not only of nonproliferation and Iran and the weapons, but also as to what is to be done, given that we've reached this impossible impasse. It's impossible. There is no solution here, just strategies. We've reached that with the fully endowed IAEA, nuclear watchdog of the United Nations, which now has to be marked down as inadequate. Henry, a very good evening to you. I recommend one more article about this snapback. The Foreign Office in Berlin, this is reporting from Germany, has issued a warning against traveling to Iran, urging German nationals to leave the country. The German embassy in Tehran is currently only able to provide limited consular assistance, said the minister. So this is not just diplomacy. This is anticipation of retaliation by the Islamic Republic. This points to nonproliferation as a debate that continues 80 years after the use of the two atomic bombs in anger. You have an article posting right now saying that the president of the United States, Mr. Trump, has declared that he is against proliferation and what is to be done. The record of the IAEA, we've talked about it over the subsequent weeks, but now that we're at another moment of tension, you'd have to say anticipating trouble. The IAEA, in your measure, in the measure of the officials in the U.S. government and even those at the U.N., is it adequate for the scale of threat now represented by the Islamic Republic? Good evening to you.
Good evening. It's great to be on your show again. Thank you. The dog can bark, it can hear, it can see, but the nuclear watchdog, which they love calling themselves, cannot bite. It cannot enforce. It is reluctant to do so because every country, including the countries that are misbehaving, are members of the IAEA. So I think it's important to expect of it only so much. I think at its best, it can validate a detection of a suspect military diversion of nuclear activity or materials. That's it. And it could stand a lot of improvement, in my opinion, on that front. But to expect it to do more than that, I think, is unfair.
I press the case. What we have now is the IAEA conveying to the government of the United States and other allies in the JCPOA that it cannot now confirm that the fissile material at 60% in Iran was destroyed by the B-2 raid of some months prior, cannot confirm this, right, despite statements by the U.S. government that the centrifuges, that the building, that the hall, and that the material was destroyed in the raid. The IAEA not confirming. Is that clarity and honesty on their part, or are they part of the political game here, whether the Trump people achieve what they claim?
Well, normally I would be skeptical that they're playing it straight. But on this one, there's a very good chance they are. And the reason why is what I just said previously. They are not taking the strides they need to be candid about their limits. And one of the limits they have is that when you are looking at fuel-making activities, you really can't keep very good count of what's going on. And even before the raid, they had perhaps the best accounting of what Iran was doing, but they would admit an incomplete accounting for sure, because you're trying to keep track not of only of overt, but you hope you know everything, which would include covert facilities. And they are candid when you talk with them that they can't know where things are hidden all the time. Not only that, but if you're keeping track of fuel making, you're keeping track of liquids, gases, and powders, good luck. And so they never really had a firm grasp once the fuel making began as to what all was going on. So why would they be able to confirm the destruction of everything if they don't know what everything is in the first place?
You write that the U.S. has an inconsistent record with regard to nonproliferation. So let's do some backstory. The NPT itself dates from, I believe it was formalized in 1970. Prior to that, we have many decisions made about research reactors. I believe the U.S. was responsible for one that went to Iran, for example, and one that went to Korea, but I'm not sure of the details. Just let us put it this way. Different presidents had different policies before the NPT. You report that Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter, certainly from opposite sides of the coin, both blocked reprocessing in South Korea, Taiwan, and Brazil. Quite apart from whether that was a good or bad decision, there was no comparable blocking after the NPT of two nations that are now at loggerheads and capable of creating nuclear chaos, which is India and Pakistan. Do we know what happened between the Carter administration and the Clinton administration, why they let India and Pakistan proliferate?
I think you want to recalibrate the timeline a bit with regard to India. India was a non-proliferation embarrassment when they tested what they called a peaceful nuclear explosive, because we were told by the Indians that they reserved the right to do that. And we said, oh, well, they'll never do that. And they did. And we gave them the means in the form of plans for their reprocessing plant and a lot of heavy water to run a heavy water plant that produced the plutonium that the reprocessing plant stripped out to create that bomb that went off. It was very embarrassing. It's what prompted the Nuclear Nonproliferation Act of 1978, which took a tougher line on those kinds of exports and the kinds of pledges and conditions. So I think the failure in the case of India and therefore Pakistan started before Ford or Jimmy Carter. The general problem is that we've gone in fits and starts against proliferation. We've taken, tough lines against certain countries that we don't curry favor with, the North Koreans and Iranians, but not been quite as firm as we might have been, let's say, with regard to Israel. And earlier on, flubbed it with regard to Iran. And then ultimately, both in the case of North Korea and Iran, once they got very close, or in the case of North Korea, actually got nuclear weapons, or very close to it, we bent the rules and we came up with formulations that ultimately have been very disappointing. In the case of North Korea, they just went ahead and got a bomb despite our agreements.
I'm speaking with Henry Sikorsky, the executive director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center. The problem is vast. What is to be done? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12-powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.